Final guest of the afternoon is Ilan Berman. He is Senior Vice President of the American Foreign Policy Council. Ilan, thanks for being with us on High FM this afternoon.
Oh, great to be back.
So much to talk to you about. I think I'm going to take absolute advantage and ask you, because I have quite more time than I thought, about anything and everything. I want to start with the Doha attack, the IDF strike on Hamas, the failed attack, one might say. Do you think that was an Israeli own goal?
So I don't, and I'm not 100% sure that it was a failed attack, because it strikes me that the silence from, or at least not a totally failed attack, because the silence from the Hamas side is deafening. One would imagine that if Israel had really misfired completely, Hamas would have a vested political interest in showing all of these people, that these people are hail, that they're hardy, and none of that has happened. So I suspect that the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. I think the attack may not have been the success that Israel wants, but less of a failure than the world media is depicting. But obviously it has political implications, and the political implications are, first of all, the Israelis, in carrying out the attack, they demonstrated an air launch missile capability that they hadn't demonstrated before. So very significant from a defense standpoint, but also enormously problematic because it created an opening for Qatar to rally regional support in a way that's really reset the table, I think, to Israel's disadvantage politically.
So I was a bit shocked by the recalibration that took place. I had thought that those countries who had peace agreements with Israel, I'm thinking Jordan and Egypt, I'm thinking those countries were members of the Abraham Accords, would not have been quite as vociferous against Israel as they were. It seemed like there was no holding back. It seems like they truly are angry. This doesn't seem to be posturing for an Arab street.
Well, so I think there's a lot that goes into this. I don't think they're angry simply because of the Qatar attack. I think certainly from the recent experience of the Gulf blockade of Qatar, everybody understands that Qatar is at best a problematic actor. And I don't think people are losing sleep over that. It is the fact that Israel carried this out in combination with a number of things. So the Jordanians may not care so much about what happens in Doha, but they care a lot about the expansion of Israeli settlements in the West Bank, for example. And so everything is sort of converging in a way that has given greater resonance to Qatari complaints. And that's, I think, military offensive that's now underway to take Gaza City, whether it's the presumptive Israeli decision to expand settlements as a response to the Saudi-French effort, which is anticipated in the next week and a half to unilaterally declare a Palestinian state, you know, whatever it is, these things aren't happening in isolation. They're converging, and they're converging in a way that is leaving Israel politically in a much more tenuous position than it was before.
I hear what you're saying. I just want to go back to the Doha incident, because when I read, I think it was yesterday, that President Trump gave an undertaking to Qatar that they would not be attacked again. I mean, what he's really doing indirectly, he's granting immunity to Hamas.
Well, so I think it's true, although, you know, sort of fairness demands that, you know, the Qataris would say, and I've been to Qatar and they've said this to me, sort of to my face, when I raise complaints about the Taliban in the American context, Hamas in the Israel context, you know, their argument is always, you know, Americans, whether Republicans or Democrats, are at least partially responsible for having us have these people here. So the Trump administration was the one that greenlit the idea of the Taliban having an outreach office in 2020. If you remember, then Secretary of State Mike Pompeo went there, and they had a, because they were trying to do their own deconfliction talks, because if President Trump had been reelected, he would have withdrawn from Afghanistan as well. So they needed a point of contact. And the Qataris, I don't think they're good actors, but they're not lying when they say that they did offer to the Biden administration to kick Hamas out of Doha. And they were told not to do that because at that time, the Biden administration really wanted a return address. They didn't want to try to get in contact with the IS Sinwar in the tunnels under Rafah or whatever it is. They wanted an address where they could direct their diplomacy. Now, in hindsight being what it is, I think that was a horrible miscalculation. And yet, the Qataris are not 100% responsible for this. That doesn't mean they're good actors. And a lot of what they've done has actually provided inspiration to Hamas for precisely this type of immunity that is perceived right now. But remember also, the reason why the U.S. is amenable to Qatari complaints is because the U.S. has 10,000 servicemen and women stationed right outside the Qatari capital at Al Udeid Air Base. And Al Udeid, Qatar, in Qatar, was responsible for intercepting those missiles and drones and cruise missiles that the Iranians fired towards Israel in April of 2024.
I didn't know that.
There's a lot of things.
That's interesting.
So there's a lot of things that are implicated, right? This is a little bit more complicated than Hamas just being a bad actor, although they're indisputably that.
Okay, no, that's one needs to digest what you've just said. That's a piece of the puzzle that I didn't know was there. That's absolutely fascinating. I saw yesterday that the Israeli journalist, quite a very well-respected journalist, Amit Segal of Channel 12 News, put out, he reminded us of the statement that the Qataris put out on the 7th of October. I mean, it was the same day that Israel was attacked, literally blaming Israel for the attack. I mean, there was no equivocation. There was no, this shouldn't have happened. It was unequivocal. It was unequivocal support for Hamas. How they have managed to present themselves as honest brokers and mediators in this conflict is just beyond my understanding. How do you attribute that success to?
No. So that to me is the sort of the real vexing question here, right? The idea that Qatar, which is very much in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood, of which Hamas is the Palestinian branch, that Qatar can style itself as an impartial mediator really sort of baffles the mind. But it's useful also, right, to zoom out, right? So I gave you the sort of the American military perspective.
Yeah.
Qatari mediation is not helpful in the Middle Eastern context, right? Qatar is putting its finger on the scale very clearly in the context of Israel. But in other theaters, they've actually been fairly helpful. So for example, if you were to go to talk to the Ukrainians, they would tell you that Qatari mediation had the salutary result of releasing dozens of Ukrainian prisoners of war from Russia. And the Qataris accomplished that, right? So the mediation thing is not just a Middle Eastern policy. This is their foreign policy. They understand that they're a small country, they're strength in numbers. They invite, you know, the United States to forward deploy troops in Qatar. And they also try to make themselves an indispensable interlocutor. And that's how they're trying to achieve protection.
Something I never understood. I would have thought that America had so much bargaining power vis-a-vis Qatar, in that the lease for that base has just come up. There must be lots of money involved. The protection must be difficult to quantify in terms of value to Qatar. You would have thought the American government would have said, tone down Al Jazeera. Just some,
absolutely,
some power, something they could have done. And yet nothing seems to have been done at all.
So I've spent time in Doha, and I was really struck by this, because the blockade that the Gulf Cooperation Council tried to institute against Qatar, it ran basically from 2017 until early 2021, was precisely this. You're too cozy with Iran, you're too cozy with the Muslim Brotherhood, Al Jazeera is spewing propaganda, Islamist propaganda that's destabilizing our regimes, knock it off. And the Qataris, because of their lobbying strength here in Washington, because of their relationship with Iran, they managed to weather that scenario. And they managed to sort of, you know, even though there was a maritime blockade, they had an air corridor over Iranian territory, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for us, this is ancient history. But in Qatar, this is such a grievous psychic wound that the National Museum in Doha has an exhibit to the blockade. And going there really gives you a sense of, oh my God, this was, for them, this was the worst thing ever. The idea that they could be isolated and they could be picked off. And that's why they're insinuating themselves in everything, right? That's why they've offered, yes, the lease on the base, is a subject of conversation. They are committed to keeping the United States military there, and they've allocated something like $8.5 billion with a B American dollars to refurbishing and rehabilitating and modernizing that facility so that America doesn't go anywhere. Personally, I think that gives us a lot of leverage over the Qataris.
I would have
but
thought.
The Trump administration is looking a little bit differently at it.
Did Israel compromise Donald Trump by this attack? I mean, they had to have told him they were not going to attack a facility right. less than 30 kilometers away from a base. Is he compromised right. by this?
I don't think so, but I do think that time has a quality all its own here. Donald Trump is perfectly willing to let BBBBB and let the Israeli military take care of Hamas. He understands that Hamas needs to be overthrown, but his patience is not endless because, after all, if you've looked at his public statements over the last 6 months, he's made quite a bit of noise about how he has ended half a dozen global conflicts. And so this is something that mars his record. So I think the Israeli government has latitude, but the patience is not endless.
I want to talk to you about the Abraham Accords. I remember at the time thinking this is possibly one of the most exciting developments that I've witnessed in my lifetime in terms of Israeli-Arab relations. It showed a way forward that you know peace was possible. Do you think it's still a viable framework for shaping Middle East alliances, or has it stalled and is this dead in the water due to the Gaza war?
I don't think it's dead in the water, but it's definitely stalled. And a lot of it, unfortunately, has to do with the Israeli government's, I would say, lack of nimbleness with regard to what it's doing in the Gaza Strip. Not that what Israel is doing is incorrect, right? October 7th was a heinous attack. Hamas, there is broad agreement, including across the Muslim world, that Hamas needs to be removed from power. But it is the Israeli government's inability to meaningfully engage with these countries and say, hey, listen, we don't have all the answers. We know we need to start thinking about a day after. We want to enlist your help. We know that you guys are regional stakeholders. We want to have a conversation. Those dogs aren't barking. And because they're not, everybody's focusing on things that are coming out through Al Jazeera. Everybody's focusing on how the media environment's being manipulated against Israel. And so only the bad news stories are surfacing. So the Israeli government, I think, through a lack of engagement, and I'm sympathetic to it because obviously this is an existential conflict, but talking is also war fighting in the context of trying to shape regional opinion. And the Israeli government isn't doing that last part. And I think that's why you're seeing that, you know, increasingly on the fifth anniversary of the Abraham Accords, the horizons aren't quite as bright as they were. Even immediately after October 7th, when countries said, you know what, we still understand the strategic logic of these ties. We just have to put them on hold for now. I think, you know, the things that Israel is talking about with regard to annexation, the thing that Israel is not talking about with regard to Gaza reconstruction is really making it difficult for these countries to see the path ahead.
What a fascinating discussion. Ilan Berman, thank you once again for your time. Shana Tova to you and your family. And thanks for being there to talk to us on Chai FM. Really appreciate it.
Oh, same to you. Hag Sameach.